This is Shop Talk, our weekly discussion of journalism issues. I'm Rich Ecker.
I'm Lisa Koenig.
And I'm Jasmine Garcia.
Let's talk today about war correspondence. There's a really interesting article in the Columbia Journalism Review written by Ann Friedman, and it has the headline, War Reporting for Amateurs. Should you just take off for a foreign country and hope to sell your work later? That seems insane, but that's something that seems to be happening more and more.
Yeah, the article cites some recent examples, including Amanda Lindhout, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing her name, who traveled to Somalia as an aspiring journalist in 2008 and was kidnapped along with her photographer and spent 15 months in captivity. And now she has a book coming out about her ordeal. She obviously survived. Her kidnapping is a New York Times Magazine cover story. So it, you know, turned into a sweet deal for her, but she took an enormous risk, and she admits that she went into this dangerous place and in Somalia. So it's very risky, but in a terrible job market, I think some young aspiring journalists see this as a ticket to a big market.
I don't know that she was even a journalist or trained to be a journalist. She just decided this was something she could try to do.
I think she actually went to do other kinds of work initially, I believe, when she went overseas and later started taking pictures and training herself to be a journalist.
So is this something either of you recommends to your young journalist in your classes? Hey, if you can't find a job, go overseas to a war zone. You might find some work there.
I don't think I could recommend going overseas and going to a war-ridden country to any of my students. I think the biggest problem here is that we're seeing fewer and fewer foreign correspondents paid by our national news organizations. And those spots are open. We need them covered, but now they're relying on these freelancers and these young journalists are going over there hoping to make it big, but some of them are not coming back. You know, and it's a very dangerous thing. And I have to look at, why are we not covering these places? Why don't we have bureaus there? I mean, why don't we find this important? I realize in the digital age, we have the ability to cover lots of these stories in maybe a cheap way, even through social media and by maybe putting one or two people in a certain place, and they're able to get the stories out, just maybe send them via the internet to their bureaus. But I'd have to say that I think we are losing foreign correspondents, and I don't think we're putting the importance of what's going on around the world into our news shows or our news programs anymore. And I have to kind of look at why is this happening? Do we as a country not really care as much about what's going on in Syria and Egypt and Somalia? I think those stories do impact us in some way, and I think the American public gets blindsided a little bit when something does happen out there and that we haven't been covering it and we don't have journalists out there already.
Well, you know, we talked a few weeks ago about the placement of stories on websites and how it's done to generate clicks so that you can generate more money through advertising. And it seems like this is a bottom line issue here, too. It's expensive to staff an overseas bureau. But if you can find some freelancer willing to do it, you don't have to pay for a bureau. You don't have to pay for that person's health benefits. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of savings for the media organization to just have a freelancer do it, and it's lower risk for you.
Right. But are those freelancers tested? Do they really know what they're walking into when they're there? If you lose this freelancer, do you take responsibility for what happened to them? I mean, they're reporting back to your station. There are lots of different questions raised here and ethical questions as well when you're relying on freelancers to report these really important international stories.
Well, you mentioned the digital age a minute or two ago. I mean, part of the reliance might be on citizen journalists, too, overseas mm-hmm. and can send stuff. But again, I don't think you're getting the same context, the same quality of information as you would with a trained journalist, someone over there who could really dig in and get dig deeper into a story rather than just shooting some film of something and sending it out on a social media site.
Yeah, you and Jasmine both raised really valuable concerns about, we have wars going on in Iraq and Afghanistan and
threats of wars elsewhere,
and we're reading less and less about them. But it's a money issue. It's so expensive mm-hmm. to staff those bureaus, and it's probably not what people really want to read about, even though they need to be informed about what's going on. So, back to the safety of these young people, one of the reporters quoted in this article, Sarah Stillman, who now writes for The New Yorker, said she ordered body armor from bulletproofme.com when she went over. I mean, she went over to Iraq initially as a freelancer on her own and financed her own trip. So it just kind of shows some of the risks these young people are taking.
She's taking some real risks. I mean, she did a story about human trafficking on U.S. military bases in Iraq mm-hmm. and Afghanistan. You never hear about that back here.
No.
We just hear about the glorious job our soldiers are doing overseas, and we don't hear about some of the really bad things that always come with some sort of a war. Mm-hmm. And for her to report that story, that's a huge risk for her personally, I would think. It's an important story that needs to be told, but it's a huge risk for her.
And maybe that's the advantage of having a freelancer there, is maybe they would be asked not to cover a story like that for a national network, but because she is freelancing, she has the ability to pick the stories that matter to her. So I can see an advantage to having freelancers over there, because maybe those stories that maybe wouldn't be very safe to tell here or pleasant to tell here maybe are being told finally. So there might be an advantage then. I can see both sides of that issue.
Yeah, you could almost, in a sense, blackmail mainstream media to carry the story, because if you have already done that story and say, if you don't want it, I'll just put it out on the internet and I'll make mention of the fact that you were not interested in this story.
Yeah.
You can almost sort of blackmail mm-hmm. a major news organization into picking up the story and getting a wider audience for some valuable reporting.
Yeah, and hoping it goes viral.
Yeah, she said she had a fellowship to finance that story that about the human trafficking, and that she ended up selling the piece to The New Yorker once it was finished, but she says it would have been a difficult thing to sell on a pitch, mm-hmm. without having reported it first. So The New Yorker bought it, and now she's a staff writer for The New Yorker. So, it landed in a major market.
All right. Mm-hmm. Hey, we've run out of time for today. Our listeners can join us again next week at this time for more of Shop Talk.